And foremost, I want to welcome Reese and Mark. Thank you for joining me live today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
It's good to be here. Absolute pleasure. Nice to have you in studio. So before we go into what the project is all about, can we just get a little bit of an introduction? Mark, you are the owner and you run Jahara, a rehabilitation center. Can you give us a little breakdown of... You don't have, no, it doesn't have to be little. Give us a story, because we've got time and it's something that people need to learn about.
Yeah, so I think we started Jahara Treatment Center in Campus Rus in November 2017. It was a passion and a dream of ours for many, many, many years. So I've kind of been working in the industry for about 18 years now. We went through doing support groups and then halfway houses, and then I worked at another really good treatment center for about 5 years. And then we suddenly just got an opportunity to make our own treatment center and to change the way treatment's being done. I think we discovered probably about 10, 11 years ago that the way of doing treatment in South Africa had kind of run its course, and we needed to create something new and different. And so when we got the opportunity in Campus Rus to open, we opened in a two-bedroomed house, and within 12 months we were running probably about 18 people in that little two-bedroomed house. Wow. And then we were blessed to buy the old Psychiat Africa up the road, still in Campus Rus. And I think... Yeah, the moment we woke up, when we came to Campus Rus, we were at a friend's house. We arrived at night. When I woke up and saw the mountain, we knew kind of this was where it was supposed to be. We'd already planned a kind of step three hike, and so I was looking for the right mountain, and it was just once we saw it, we knew we were here. And it's grown from strength to strength. I think we're currently running 35, 40 residents. We have a staff of about 25. And we've really, really, really done a lot of work in redeveloping the therapeutic process of what treatment's all about. So.
And Mark, you know, obviously, like you said earlier on, you're wanting to change the way rehabilitation centres work. I mean, I remember there's always a lot of scandal behind different types of rehabilitation facilities, where there was that break you down, beat you up, starve you type of mentality, and we're going to get it out of you, you know, and people were fearful to send their children to these types of places, because some of them, I mean, there was an incident when one of the kids was beaten to death, and they all come with horror stories.
Yeah.
So obviously that's your outlook, was to change the way this rehabilitation facility deals with people with an addiction.
Yeah, so look, I think you need to understand from a very... From a history perspective, I mean, the first real treatment center was one or two in South Africa, was Nopwood Christian Care Center, and that was early 90s, and that was very, very, very much a militant style rehabilitation center. And if you track all the other rehab centers in South Africa, many of them were birthed out of that system, and each and every one of them tried to change it a little bit. What we discovered, though, is that society drastically changed. So when I first went into rehab in 2003, I mean, we were in rehab with people that had been to the military. It was, you know, people had to go to military service way back when. There was still corporal punishment in schools. There was no real social media. And slowly but surely, all of these things has been taken out of society. Mm-hmm. So what used to work, because I'm not bad-mouthing it, it used to work. People used to look at discipline and say, well, that's something to be respected, and authority was respected. But slowly but surely, society's changed, and they've taken away the punishment, and they've put rights in place, which is, I'm not against it.
But it's taken away accountability.
Yes, and one of the big things I noticed in social media and in society is that we really go out of our way to undermine authority figures. Mm-hmm. We're always complaining about governments, we're always complaining about the police. Anything that's in charge of anything gets massive criticism. And slowly but surely, I think we've taught people not to just conform to authority figures. And so the old system always forced that conforming, and it ended up being real big power struggles between those in authority and those that we were trying to force into a box.
Yeah.
And that power struggle eventually got to a point where it just wasn't working. So we really decided we're going to take the authority, discipline, all of it out of treatment, and create a space that promotes peace and joy and personal responsibility and ownership. Many people, including myself, didn't think it would ever work. It was fine when there was 5 residents and 10 residents, and I did think sooner or later we're going to have to reinvest into the system. But it's managed to grow itself into something that functions quite well. And I've discovered if you take the rules and regulations out of the system, specifically from an addiction perspective, there's no authority to go against. And so that personal responsibility really gives them the motivation to actually kind of change for themselves.
Because it's got to come from themselves. With your experience, people with addiction, what is the percentage of them coming willingly versus the percentage of them being forced to come to a rehabilitation center?
So I think one needs to understand most people develop addiction. Addiction's not a dependency. Yeah. So look at alcohol. Most people have had alcohol. When you drink, you kind of relax and you start to become somebody that you're not normally when you're sober. So like that's some of the fun of getting a bit tipsy. Now, when you look at someone who's got an addiction, when they're sober, they're unable to function. The fear, the anxiety, all of that is too much. So they can't function within society. So they then drink or do drugs to get that confidence, to get the identity and the purpose. So when you start taking somebody's drugs away, what you're doing is you're pushing them into a position of almost being crippled in society. And so it's not really about removing the substances, it's about giving them their worth and their value back. And so people can come willingly or unwillingly, that doesn't make any difference. We've just got to show them the benefits of treatment. So once they start to experience, well, I can actually live life without drugs, I can find acceptance, I can develop worth and value, the drugs then become a non-entity.
And gives them purpose. They need that purpose for living.
Correct. So the purpose isn't built within the culture of addiction. It's built within a culture of recovery. And once I've got a purpose and belonging and identity and value, I don't need the drugs anymore. And so if we can show them a life that's better than the life of addiction, that's the key to success.
Of course. And Reese, you've not only are you working as a counselor, but you've also walked this path. Can you give us a bit of a background on yourself?
So I have been at Johara Treatment Center for the last 3.5 years. I was in program personally for alcohol and gambling for about 11.5 months. So it's a journey that my brother walked initially before me. It's definitely a journey that's saved his life, that saved my life. One where, you know, kind of going through the program as a resident, where there's a lot of areas that obviously need to be dived into, and a lot of areas where the therapeutic staff, you know, really make sure that they kind of go into those areas at the right time and facilitate that, you know, the most appropriate way. It's really a place where there's no judgment, and a place where you can connect to other people, to understand that, you know, you're not actually alone in this fight against addiction.
And that is unfortunately the stigma attached to it is the labeling that goes with it. And Mark, we were talking earlier on as well, is that instead of looking at this as wow, what a fantastic opportunity for someone to come out through the other side of something so bad, you get stigmatized. And I think people then are embarrassed to say that I'm in this facility, or embarrassed to say what they've been through, instead of using it as an accolade to say I was there, but look where I am now.
Yeah, so look, we've done quite a lot of research that really trying to understand where does this addiction stem from. Now, the problem that you have is in society, people see addiction as trauma-related or bad upbringing or abuse or whatever. And so when they see an addict, they think, I wonder what the family's all about.
Yeah.
You know, so the thing goes even deeper to when I'm coming into treatment, not even my parents want to acknowledge that I've got this problem. So the whole family system's now saying, ooh, this problem is not something we can talk about because the society thinks this is a trauma, abuse, broken homes. It's just not true. You know, addiction comes to anybody. And if I were in the research, I mean, all the addicts we did research with, it was about 161. The divorce rate within their family was only like 21%. You know, the family upbringing was good.
Solid.
And so you get a lot of people that sit and they do have this judgment, and then suddenly it happens to their family. And the parents are like, well, what did I do wrong? And they get blamed, and then they feel shame. And you know, the shame and addiction go hand in hand. Mm. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate that most of the research into addiction is done by professionals that haven't been through addiction, that are speaking to people that are first coming into treatment with all the denial and the blame and the justification. So the narrative that starts just from that point is quite intense, because as addicts, we have to have somebody to blame.
Yeah.
And we often teach trauma is very much perceptive. Like, I can perceive a situation as traumatic. It doesn't mean that it was traumatic. Mm. And so, yes, most people in addiction have this real victim kind of narrative, because it justifies what they're choosing to do. But that narrative is not necessarily a reflection of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in terms of going forward, you obviously want to maintain Jahara, and that's all about bringing in the right people to come in. So you've got counselors, you've got psychologists, I would presume, that come in. You don't distribute medication, hey?
No, we do have a full medical department.
Okay, so you do, so you can do that.
Yeah, we do have a full medical department with nurses. We do work with the doctors, obviously subcontracted. We do have psychiatrists. About 40% of all the patients have got psychiatric conditions.
Okay.
So there is a really big medical aspect to the treatment being provided. Then the therapeutic one, the social workers. And then you've got everything else that goes with it. Managing a kitchen that feeds 70 people three times a week, you know, managing the maintenance department and upkeeps, managing all the logistics and the driving, you know, the garden. It's really a big organization that functions 365 days a year. You know, we do Christmas, the families all come for Christmas, so it never stops.
Yeah.
I think we've got about 27 staff at the moment.
Yeah.
So it is quite a big organization. Mm-hmm. It is certainly one of the top centers of South Africa. You know, and I think when you look at rehabilitation, you obviously get different costings. So you get a lower costing treatment center, which attracts a lot more people. So you have double the amount of residents with the same amount of staff. And then you go into the medium kind of costing centers, and you start to find a bit of a balance between staff and resident numbers. And then you obviously have your real luxury treatment center. So we're kind of sitting in the middle. But if you look at the demographics of South Africa, it's still beyond most people's reach. To pay a monthly fee into treatment is just not money expenditure that many
absolutely,
people have.
Absolutely. And also maintaining that for you as well, I can understand. It's like a full time for everything in terms of employees and costs and everything that goes with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's all. It's medical insurance, house insurance, it's everything that goes with it. So I mean, our model is obviously we're a private treatment center, but we're not in it to make any money.
Yeah.
We have about 30% sponsored and subsidized beds, so we really see the ability to charge some people that gives us the ability to have free beds. So we at any one time have between 6 and 10 people fully sponsored, so this center will cover the tuck shop and the psychiatric and the medical, and then about another 5 or 6 that are on reduced rates, so half rates.
And obviously, Mark, you are open to any, I mean, you are open to donations. You're open not just for this project that we're talking about, but overall for the center. And that can be in terms of hours from a professional. It could be any contribution would always be welcome, I presume.
Yes, look, it is always something that we do welcome. Although, to be honest, we don't rely on it. So we manage the income to make sure that that's functioning. So 9 times out of 10, just from a principled spiritual perspective, anything that gets donated goes back out into these kind of projects.
Yes.
You know, we're always pushing back out into the community. We're not something that requires donations.
Yes.
In fact, you won't find us raising funds for the operations of Jahara. That's something we take on ourselves, and then anything we raise will be to go into the communities and help others.
And you've done quite a few of these outreach projects before, and they've been very successful. And give me a bit of a background about this initiative that is in ARCA.
Look, I think before that, I think one needs to understand from addiction is a very self-centered illness. And it's all about me. And treatment can also be a very selfish process because I'm constantly trying to fix myself. Part of recovery is always understanding it's not really about me, and I've got this need to serve and pay back society and my family and everything that I've actually robbed, from finances to time to whatever. And so the outreach is predominantly there to ensure that the guys that are getting treatment have that experience of the value of giving back. And so we found over years, I mean, I've been doing outreaches for 10, 11 years, that the experience of going out and interacting with people and giving is something that really shifts the people fundamentally. And of course,
it's a type of therapy for them as well.
100%. Yeah. The added benefit is obviously all the communities that we help. Yeah. You know, and we've got a huge community from Heal. Then I mean, there's 13 support groups that we're part of. There's many people that have come through our door, so we have such a vast community. And for people to just clean out their cupboards and give a couple of items of food, if you've got 1,000 people to do that, you have got a lot of donated items. And then we've got, like, I think there's 60 of us going to Naka. I mean, that's 60 hands to go and do vegetable gardens, to go and help and build and paint and do all those things. So I think for me the biggest thing is the things we have to give is our hands and our time. And so if we can go into Anaka, and I'm excited because it's a small island, so whatever we take onto that island wasn't there in the first place. And it's a focused
group. There a community that's quite a big community that stays on that island?
Very much so. So there's obviously a lot of lodges, but then there's the community that supports all the lodges. And so there is a massive local community that definitely needs assistance and help. We're very mindful of the stuff we're taking across, so we don't want to clutter the island. Yeah. But, you know, for us to put in the effort to take all these things to that community, I think is going to make a massive impact in those people's lives, eh?
And, you know, if I look at what you are wanting to actually do there, you've got solar pumps, you've got drip irrigation, fencing, wire, poles, planks, shade cloth, spades, wheelbarrows, rakes, seeds. Now that for me is already sounding like that's how you start. You know what I'm saying? You're like, teach them how to fish.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So we've secured a large piece of land there. So the aim of this project is to get a big farming portion going. So we want to take the seeds, we want to set up the farm. We've got people there that can run the farm. Obviously, one of the bigger problems on that thing is that the lodges all need fresh fruits and vegetables. So the sale of the produce will predominantly go to the lodges, but the income that comes from that is going to go back into farming into the community. Yeah. So farming packs, and it allows them to feed what the community needs. Yeah. And so with a large piece of land, with 60 hands, with all the equipment and the seeds, we can over 8 days really go and get things going and set it up to become self-sufficient. But the second thing to that is really just going and interacting with the people. Yeah. You know, and I know often when people do outreach, they want it sustainable and ongoing. But at the same time, there's also an experience to life, you know, to have people coming and just offering some kind words and help and food that they may not have had for that day, you know, and just engaging with different cultures. You know, that life experience is what makes kind of human living enjoyable.
And Mark, just to backtrack a little bit, you've got such a passion for what you're doing. What was your involvement? Did you go through addiction, or why did you go through this path?
So I definitely went through addiction from about the age of 13. I think I eventually got into my third treatment center just after 21. It escalated really quickly. So when I went into rehab the final time, it was a heroin and crack cocaine addiction. Treatment didn't work for me. I was using during the last phases of my treatment, and I went overseas again, and life just crashed down. And so it was at that point that I took all the life lessons from my treatment experiences and started to implement them, and slowly but surely just got invested into the first project was building the Heal support groups. And so those have expanded from one group over the last 18 years to about 15, 16 groups across South Africa, and then halfway houses, and then going into inpatient treatment. And so, it's been an amazing 18-year journey to go from heroin addiction all the way through to sitting in Campus Rus with a house on the mountain and a treatment center. And yeah, there's so many highlights throughout that journey, ups and downs. But yeah, it really has been quite a life that's, I wouldn't give it up for anything really.
That little saying, you plan, God laughs, because he's got a plan, you know?
Yes.
And you've got seasons in your life and journeys that have to be taken.
Yeah, so I mean, just before we opened Johara, I mean, it was probably the most difficult time in my life, and that's a whole nother story we can maybe go into another time, but that fundamentally changed me. But I lost everything, and not based on my addiction. I was still in recovery, but I had to give up everything to get here, and just to see what God's kind of put back in, you know. I lost all the furniture in my house, and he's just resupplied it, and then some, you know, and to look at where we're living now and what we have now, one can't humanly conceptualize this was the plan, you know. But I mean, it's miraculous. So yeah, where God's taking us next, I'm not too sure.
In Yaka
yeah
in Yaka. And just to go back to that, you know, obviously the donations are going to obviously go a very far way, and we're talking about clothing, and we're talking about food items. Obviously the tinned items we need to take into consideration, maize, rice, non-perishable items, and then school supplies, obviously, for the kids that are out there. And we'll send this out as well to all the listeners, so you can know exactly what we're looking for. But we're talking about backpacks, books, stationery, bedding, medical supplies, and sports equipment. And in terms of taking that over the border, it won't be too much of an issue for you guys.
So we're very blessed, because the last time we went to Beira, we were treating somebody whose parents are quite well known in Mozambique, and so we went through last time with all the support, and the family is very, very supportive of us going again. So yeah, we've got the government approval to take all the supplies
into Mozambique. Because that's the last thing you would need, is to get all the way there and then you have a problem taking medication over, or too many supplies, or
we do practice honesty and integrity, and that's what we preach. So you know, we've got to walk those things. So no, we definitely do have the government approval to go through into Mozambique, which is really nice. I do want to say, and I don't normally say this, but you know, we generally don't look for cash donations, but in this instance, obviously buying seeds, and we want to go and purchase things, it's much easier for us to purchase on that side and support the local economy and to go. So it's not always my drive is for cash donations, but with these bigger international ones, you know, all the guys that are coming with us cover all the costs to get the petrol there and the trailers, and so we cover our costs and traveling costs. But the income to buy the rice and to buy the seeds and to get those things on that side is also really, really important.
Yeah. And obviously you're putting back into the community as well.
Correct.
At all times. And buying local is what I also encourage, you know, support local, buy local. And that's how we keep our town going at the end of the day.
So I think it's also important for me to also just say, like, and my wife's very, very important on this, is that we, you know, although this one's a big international one, which is part of the adventure and going out past our kind of borders, we only do the big ones once we've done the local ones.
Yes,
and
yes.
So, you know, we will do the next 2 or 3 years, we'll all be local again, and then we'll go to Lesotho or Swaziland and you know, just spread the impact a little bit. But yeah, it is something that helping out our local communities is just as important to us.
Completely, and you've proven that time and time again, without a doubt. And you've got a couple of drop-off points. I see that you do have some drop-off points. You've got a drop-off point in Pretoria, Johannesburg, and Krugersdorp. So we'll send all those details out there on our website as well. And if you want to go along there and go and drop some stuff off, you are more than welcome. We'll send all the contact details out, and you can just get hold of them to confirm and go and drop some stuff off there. And Mark, just sort of finishing off in terms of taking away that stigma going to rehab is such a no-no and so frowned upon. What words of encouragement can you give to people that are actually maybe sitting in addiction and they don't know how to, they don't know what the next step is, because they feel, they obviously are feeling embarrassed, they're feeling, they're fearful, or they don't know what the next step is for them?
The biggest driving force to any addiction fundamentally boils down to a fear. It starts in fear, and you know, fear is what keeps you in addiction. So when we go back to childhood, there's always a fear of rejection and failure that drives us down that road. And so the biggest thing that keeps anybody from entering treatment is the fear of the unknown, fear of stepping out of my comfort and stepping into a rehab that's stigmatized to be really difficult and dangerous and, you know, hardcore, whatever. And it's a myth, it's a stigma. You know, there are plenty of treatment centers there that are welcoming communities of acceptance, and to teach you to learn that life can be good without substances, you know, and carrying the trauma and the narratives of addiction will keep us stuck there, and we don't see a way out, and we need people to show us this is the way out. We can't do it alone, and we can't kind of step out of that and just think we can put the drugs down and everything
and
will
walk
be okay.
Away.
The drugs are just a symptom of the much bigger problem.
And just knowing that we've got such a brilliant facility, I know that you don't, there's a reason why you don't want to encourage locals, because it's, you want people that are out of their comfort zones and away from
resources.
I understand that. But I mean, if someone just wants to contact for some counseling, or just to get some more information of other facilities that you would recommend, they can obviously just get hold of you guys.
Absolutely, and that service is free. You know, we don't charge for that. If people need help or guidance or support, you know, we do have a couple of locals, so it's not an absolute no-no, but we will take each case as it comes, and we're happy to advise which direction to go and how to go about it. So that they can phone anytime, and if they're local, we can meet them in town, or they can come to the center. We love doing that kind of stuff, and so anybody that is in some kind of crisis or wants some kind of input, they are more than welcome to give us a shout.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in studio. And obviously, we're going to promote this. I'm going to get it out there. We'll keep people up to date. And I'll be in touch with both of you, and we can just see, we can track it and see how we are doing.
Awesome.
Okay.
Can I say two more things?
Yes, you are more than welcome.
Things.
Three, you can say five more things.
One, I think we are going to be doing an auction hopefully next week, and we promoted it on our Facebook page. A lot of times people don't have anything to give, but we all have a time and a service that we can give. And so we're really looking for little vouchers that we can auction off online. And secondly, we've got the big snare competition where we're going to go against ProTrack and hopefully FarmWatch and go and hunt for snares.
We got to count on the most snares.
We're hoping that people are going to pledge 10 rand or 20 rand per snare. And, you know, that's really something big for Hoedspruit and the conservation to go out there. And so if they can watch our Facebook pages for these events, that would be really, really cool. And then, lastly, just a big thanks to the Hoedspruit community already. It's a great community, and we're blessed to be a part of it.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And thank you for listening.